It's Thursday night. Time for the Psychic View with your hosts, Maureen Halloran, Steve Frampton, Jackie Hahn, and Allura. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Welcome to The Psychic View on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with the show.
Good evening, everybody. My name's Steve Frampton, and I'd like to welcome you to this evening's broadcast of The Psychic View, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. Tonight we'll be discussing the afterlife with our very special guest, Dr. Pamela Heath. And before I introduce Dr. Heath, I'd like to welcome my co-hosts, starting with Maureen Halloran. How are you doing this evening, Maureen?
Well, I'm just doing fabulously. Thank you very much, Steve. And and thank you for asking. I would like to tell everybody a little bit about what I do. And let's see, I vacuum. No, I'm just kidding. I'm an intuitive psychic. We're all psychic. Intuitive. Also, I have all the C's. I'm not going to go through all that. But when my readings are about is that I am very objective, and I take pride in that. I'm very objective with everybody's situations being different. I utilize tarot. That's my favorite thing, but I do not need to have them in front of me to be used. So I really try to help people see that even if there's a negative that I might pick up, it could be made a positive by making choices. So it's really in their personal power to do that. And I, focus on spiritual development is really the big thing that I like to, and also, relationships and business. I'm very good on business and ventures and such like that, and past lives, and just all that. There you have it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Maureen. It's wonderful to have you with us. You've got huge experience, so thanks for being with us this evening on the show. We always have a lot of fun. I also would like to introduce Allura. How are you doing, Allura?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Steve. How about you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Allura. Would you like to tell us or tell our listeners about your work?
Sure. One of the things I do is I use native philosophy, animal medicine particularly, to look into specific areas of their lives that they wish me to. And in doing that, I help them understand a little bit more about the nature of their reality, help them balance the situation out so that they can make and their understanding of it so that they can make more favorable decisions. And generally speaking, one of the tools I use are the Native American animal medicine cards, and I mix that with the sacred path cards and just, do this in any area of their life. And that's why I call myself a spiritual coach. So that's what I do.
Wonderful. Thank you, Allura. It's great to have you with us as well. And we have our special co-host, Res Miranda, with us this week as well. So welcome, Res Miranda. If you'd like to tell us about your work, we'd love to hear all about your work and experiences as well.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here with my favorite psychic people of all time. Seriously. And hello to everybody in the chat room, too. I am an online psychic, of course, as are all of you. I like to say that I specialize in not only helping people find their destiny, but helping make sure that they get there. I like to act as a spiritual and metaphysical guide along the way. I am also host of Get Resmerized on PTN Radio, and I'm a fringe dweller. And that's, much too long to explain here.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that sometime. It sounds interesting.
Yes.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us, Res Miranda. Okay, so I'll briefly introduce myself. My name is Steve Frampton. I'm a psychic medium and co-host on the Psychic Access Talk radio show. This week I'm hosting the show with Dr. Pamela Heath. I'm also available for readings at psychicaccess.com. And really excited about this evening's show. So, This evening we've got Dr. Pamela Heath. She has received her medical degree from the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston and then practiced anesthesiology for nearly 30 years, serving as chief of anesthesia at Humana Hospital, Abilene, and at Chinle Hospital on the Navajo Reservation. Now, Dr. Heath began having spontaneous psychic experiences in the early 1990s, and this led her to return to graduate school for a doctorate in psychology with a dual specialization in parapsychology and hypnosis. She has such great experience and is absolutely fascinating to speak with. Now, Dr. Heath has practiced medicine for nearly 30 years, and she's co-founder of the Paranormal Research Organization. She's a published author. I've been reading one of her books this evening. It's called The Handbook to the Afterlife. It's absolutely fascinating. One of the best books I've ever read on the afterlife and mediumship. It's wonderful. She's also written a book called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, The PK Zone, A Cross-Cultural Guide to Psychokinesis, Into the PK Zone, and Mind-Matter Interaction, Historical Reports, Research, and First-Hand Accounts. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Dr. Heath's work, please be sure to visit her website, which is www.pamelaheath.com. Now, be sure to stay tuned for the second half of our show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics, and we'll announce the call-in number later in the show, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. And if you were unable to catch our show on remote viewing with Gerald O'Donnell last week, you'll find a recorded archive link, as well as archives for all of our previous shows on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. The show last week with Gerald O'Donnell was absolutely fascinating. He's a really interesting man. And please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family by email or on Facebook. It's our mission to reach out with our guides and to connect with as many people as possible, so be sure to include others in our show. And I'm really excited to announce that we're simultaneously broadcasting the show on People's TV Network. Now, it's an honor to have Dr. Pamela Heath with us this evening. I would like to welcome Dr. Heath to the show. How are you doing, Dr. Heath?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me tonight.
Our pleasure. I know that we've spoken a couple of times on the telephone, Dr. Heath, and it's just wonderful to have you with us. I was fascinated by our conversations and know that we're going to have a wonderful show and we'll learn a lot from you.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Now, I wanted to start off, Dr. Heath, asking if you could tell us a little bit about your professional journey to date.
Well, I started out as a physician, actually a board-certified anesthesiologist, and I was in my early 30s, and I started having psychic experiences, which really kind of freaked me out, because I think a lot of people have the expectation that you're either psychic from childhood or you're, you know, never psychic. I mean, and in fact, it happened once I looked into it, that a lot of people do start having psychic abilities as adults. That it's not something that you necessarily always have from childhood on. But it really freaked me out. And after I got over that and I was able to even talk about it, think about it, I started experimenting with myself to see what I could or couldn't do and see if it was consistent, repeatable, and it was. And then I decided, well, if I could do it, anybody can do it. So I wanted to understand it, and I went back and I got another doctorate, this time in parapsychology, and specialized in mind-matter interaction. And really, the PK Zone was my first real book, and it sort of was trying to help other people who were struggling take the same journey I had without having to pay for 4 years of graduate school in a brick-and-mortar school. So that they could sort of come to the same understanding I did, that this is very normal stuff. Anybody can do it.
That's incredible. And I've been reading your book, Handbook to the Afterlife, this week, and it's absolutely brilliant. And I know that you reviewed more than 200 years of material on mediumship and the afterlife, Dr. Heath. Now, what can I ask, why did you choose this subject for that book?
Well, this book actually grew out of the earlier one, the suicide book, which was because I had the head of my dissertation program was John Klimo, who's my co-author, and he kept telling me that he'd had a time when he was assigned as a kind of bibliotherapy, where you give a patient things to read to help them understand what's going on in their lives. And this was a woman who was suicidal and, you know, wanted to take her life. And what John understood was, if you look at what the channel material says, then taking the life of a healthy body is not considered a good idea. And so he gathered together some stuff and then promptly forgot about it and didn't keep copies. And I kept going, John, you know, this could save lives. And so we wrote that book, in large part because as a doctor, I do believe in informed consent. If you're going to do this, know what you're getting into. And I do think a lot of people, if they did know what they were getting into, wouldn't make that choice. However, after that came out, I did do the circuits, and I did some conferences with paranormal enthusiasts and those who are interested in ghost investigations, and they asked me a lot of questions about the afterlife, which made it clear to me that the material in the suicide book would be very helpful to them also, because it does talk in general terms about the afterlife and what happens. And the problem was, every time I suggested they read it, you know, I ran into this huge fear factor that people didn't want to read anything about suicide, that it just really bothered them on some level that they just couldn't cope with. And it wasn't a logical level, it's an emotional level, and you can't argue with stuff like that. I mean, we all have these things that push our buttons, and suicide is one that gets a lot of people. So I ended up, you know, starting this other book. And initially we thought we would just call the information of suicide out and leave the other stuff in, but as we started writing this book, we started realizing that there was a lot more to it that we hadn't included in the suicide book. And we kind of reorganized the information and added new stuff in, and then John's one chapter introduction ended up being four chapters, talking about different perspectives about the afterlife, from different religions and also from the atheist or skeptical viewpoint. And then the middle third was just different stages of the afterlife, how people can get stuck. And it was oriented towards people who are dealing with ghost investigations, because I wanted them to understand what they might be dealing with, where spirits get stuck, how they get stuck, how do you help them move on. And of course, the last third of the book is how you can make connection yourself.
Wow, as I said, it's a brilliant book. I'm almost at the end. I've got about a chapter to go, but it's fascinating. And I was really excited to learn at the beginning of the book, as you mentioned, about major religions' views on the afterlife. I'm a spiritualist, so I absolutely believe in the afterlife and work as a medium. But it's interesting to hear the different views that religions have. Could you tell us, Dr. Heath, what are your main observations about different religions' views on the afterlife?
Well, they certainly have a certain amount of common ground. And I think one of the key things that I saw, and it didn't matter whether you were looking at the Egyptian Book of the Dead or Hindu, Buddhist, Islamic, Christianity, it didn't matter. Almost every type of religion talks about some kind of judgment and life review. And that, I thought, was kind of interesting, that that seems to be such a universal factor in every religion that you can imagine, almost. I don't think I saw any religion that skipped that. You know, and that's sort of interesting. The only thing that sort of shifts from one religion to the next is the fact that some believe that you're judged by others, and others may believe that you judge yourself. I'm hearing some very interesting background noise right now.
And Dr. Heath, with your own psychic experiences and your experience as a medium, what's your personal view now?
Oh, well, I definitely do believe in an afterlife. I think where I've seen the most shift from before I became intuitive was I didn't used to believe in reincarnation. And what changed my mind on that was actually reading some of the really good research that came out of the University of Virginia. And one of the best books on that is 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation by Ian Stevenson. And once you start reading some of those cases, reincarnation really is the best explanation, the simplest explanation for some of what gets seen. And I'm sure we have a lot of parents out there. If you have children who are somewhere between 3 and 5, that's when it seems to be commonest that past life memories will come up, and sometimes with incredible detail and accuracy. And Ian Stevenson was looking at kids in third world countries who had no access to television or movies and never traveled, and yet they could speak entire other languages they'd never been exposed to.
I remember reading you mentioned Jenny Cockle, the lady who always had memories of a past life in Ireland. I'm sure you referenced that in your book as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories of this, and I have to admit, I've had past life memories that came up on my own. However, I tend to take a psychologist perspective of them, that we're supposed to live in the present, not the past.
So
well,
can
let's
I ask
pick another topic. I don't think I'm supposed to talk about reincarnation.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fascinating. And just before we redialed, I remember as a kid, I read the book about Jenny Cockle, the lady in the UK that had incredible memories of her previous lifetime in Ireland, and I'm sure that you reference her in your book.
I do not remember offhand. I'm already on the next book and kind of buried in that, but
okay.
There have been a lot of stories of that. The problem you can get into when it involves the Western world is that there are other sources of information that could be forgotten, whether it be movies, televisions, whatever, or something you've read and then you forgot that you ever read it, that could get incorporated, and it's referred to as cryptomnesia by parapsychologists. And that's why Ian Stevenson did a lot of his work in third world countries where that was eliminated. You couldn't use that as an excuse. But that's a very interesting thing. I think it's still very controversial. It's certainly controversial in the channeled messages. Not everybody agrees that there's reincarnation or how reincarnation happens, whether it's really a personality or something else that continues onward. But we talk about all the different, possibilities. That's one of the things in both of our books that John and I have done is, rather than put our own stamp on it, we try to present to the reader all perspectives and all viewpoints. And we'll note if something sounds like it might be biased or if something is in the majority and something else is in the minority. But we try and present everything so that you, readers, can make up your own mind and not feel like we're trying to strong-arm you into any particular opinion.
Yeah, and that was one of my observations as I read your book, Handbook to the Afterlife, because it's very balanced and there's a huge amount of information there. It's absolutely fascinating. But I wonder if we could talk a little bit about what actually happens. Again, I know that there are different views, but I was really fascinated just to learn about the documentation and the evidence about what happens when we do pass to spirit or pass to the afterlife. Could you give us an explanation about the process once we do actually pass to spirit?
Well, there seem to be a lot of stages that we go through. And the first one is having to recognize that we're dead, which is harder for people than you might think. And then you have to separate from the body. A lot of guides say that there's always spirit helpers around, that you never catch them by surprise, even if it's a car accident or something, that they're there to greet you and to sort of help orient you to the other side. And generally what they try and do then is try and help you move through different levels. And I'd say the average is anywhere from 7 to 9 that different mediums will talk about. To whatever, you know, from the densest levels to the brightest of the light or the closest to the source, depending on how you want to describe it. And there's a second reunion or a second greeting that tends to be more people that you know or had heard of to sort of welcome you. And I personally think that's kind of meant as a deliberate distraction, because people, you know, they don't want you to be focused back with the living. You're supposed to be, you know, in the present, in the afterlife. So you get to be greeted by a lot of people to sort of remind you of the things that you've gained so that you're not just focused on that which you've lost. Very common to have then a period of rest, because that's a very emotional thing to greet all these people and die and, you know, deal with this adjustment. So many people will spend some time recovering, and then they get the life review and what seemed to be most often to be self-judgment under spirit guides to make sure that you don't, shortchange yourself or be too hard on yourself, either one. So they try and bring balanced perspective to the process. Generally, after that, a lot of people choose some kind of spiritual work, either as a way of making amends or as a way to sort of reinforce something they'd learned. And this whole process really seems to be about making thoughtful choices and learning from them. And it's really true for this life, and I think it continues into the afterlife.
So in effect, our work continues once we've passed the spirit and we've had a period of we've met loved ones or been reunited with loved ones, and we then recuperate, and then we look back at our lifetime and complete an assessment of our lives with our spirit guides. But then our spiritual work or our work continues beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that was a little bit surprising to me, though, is that they really encourage us to do our work while we're still alive, because it kind of gives you a head start on what you're going to do in the afterlife. And the other thing is, part of why we apparently take bodies is because for some reason, it's in this dense form, it's easier to really make spiritual advances and spiritual progress than it is in the afterlife. And that's kind of, I think, was a little surprising to me. That they would say, you would think that, when you're in the afterlife, it's easier to be enlightened then, right? But they say if you really want to advance spiritually, it's better to do it while you're in the body.
That is surprising. I wasn't aware of that. I came to the conclusion as well that whilst we might be doing spiritual work in this lifetime, that probably we'd be much more easily enlightened in the afterlife. So the more we do in our physical bodies and in our current lifetimes to develop ourselves spiritually and to do spiritual work, the better and the faster we progress once we do pass to spirit.
Yes, that seems to be the case. And I don't know if we talked about it. The Handbook to the Afterlife, believe it or not, was really meant to be a Cliff Notes version of everything that we could sort of jam in there together. And that actually was our byword when we were writing it. I kept telling John, Cliff Notes, you know, keep it short, you know. So I'm not sure if we had it in this book. I know we did talk about that in the suicide book, because one of the guides who was channeled for that is actually three guides that called themselves Trio. And, boy, they had some of the most interesting stuff that came through. I mean, I actually reread some of those sections of the book, because that's one of those where it's almost like a Zen koan, that the more you read it, the more you start to see and understand. And they're talking about unfoldment and how our whole purpose is to sort of unfold who we are.
Yeah, to be honest, I find that with spiritual books and just spiritual writing and lessons generally, that I seem to, I like to go back to books and go back to different sources. I tend to keep everything and then revisit things. And I find that I almost digest the material, the concepts at a more profound level each time I go back. It's almost as though I miss things, or, you know, you absorb the information on one level, but then when you go back with a bit more maturity and a bit, you know, a broader perspective, you absorb more.
Yeah, you'll see another level to it. I think many of these things, they have multiple levels. And, you know, it's easy to get the superficial level. I kind of raced through it a minute ago in terms of the afterlife. But then the more you study it, the more you start to see, you know, what sort of deeper and how it all interconnects.
Absolutely. It's just fascinating. And I know from your book as well that there are different levels of existence in the afterlife. And I'm really interested to ask you about that, because I found that interesting, but still I'm not sure I understand well the different levels of existence when we do pass to the afterlife.
Well, we basically, even if we're talking about us when we're physically alive, psychologists will tell you that we all, to a certain extent, create our own realities, or we at least influence them strongly. And you sort of see what you expect to see. So there's some people who will walk around with a chip on their shoulder, and they think everybody's against them, and no matter what happens, no matter how neutral or positive it is, they see it as everybody's out to get them. So you can sort of create your own interpretation of the world as you're moving through it. Now, if we can do that when we have physical bodies, you know, and things that are undeniably in front of us, how much more of a problem is this in the afterlife, where we literally create the world around us with our thoughts and expectations? And what you think of immediately is there. And
wow. That's a really fascinating point.
It's a
point that Gerald O'Donnell made last week. And I know that Maureen, one of my co-hosts, actually everybody seems to have a question, Dr. Heath. Everybody's fascinated by what you're saying, but I want to ask Maureen first. Maureen, you have a question.
You do take your psychological baggage with you. I think that's important.
It doesn't just go away when we transition.
Well, now, it's the
Maureen,
one thing
your
you
question?
Take with you is your psychological baggage.
Maureen, are you there?
I'm here.
Wonderful.
Wherever Maureen is.
Oh, Elora, sorry.
I'm teasing.
What's your question, Elora?
No, there are a lot of things. I was also surprised to hear that we take on bodies because we can move, I guess, more quickly through to a higher spiritual awareness, like Dr. Heath was saying, and that is a surprise to me. So, you know, because I always thought, because when we're here on Earth, there's a veil there, right? And we have to kind of relearn the nature of reality, because even though as children we might be very close to it, at some point as we become adults, we learn to take on all the indoctrinations, the fears, and everything else that, you know, we're brought up with. So I thought it'd be much more of a struggle to do that, but maybe I'm thinking it may be the struggle that brings us to that wisdom or that spiritual awareness by the time we're older.
Yeah,
so I wanted to ask you about that. What is it that makes us be able to move faster?
It has to do with the density of the body to a certain extent. That if you can shift it energetically at this really dense level, that when it comes to the more expansive, the lighter, higher vibration, it's gone farther.
Oh,
you're shifting
very
at such
interesting.
A dense level. And I think the other thing people forget about is there's one thing that physical life provides, which you do not have in the afterlife, and that is boundaries. We have boundaries of time, We have boundaries of person. We have boundaries to deal with, and boundaries allow you to make choices. And when there's no boundaries, it's harder to do.
Oh, that's very good. Thank you for sharing that. That's a really interesting perspective I never would have thought of.
I'm interested to ask Dr. Heath, how does that play out in the afterlife? If we don't have boundaries, does that mean we're less able to make choices?
No, I think it's less clear that you are making a choice.
Okay.
Because there's less separation from you to others, so it's almost hard to describe. It's less discreet. It's sort of interesting that early on, when people are in the afterlife, one of the things you'll see very commonly is they will have what they call managed communities, which, part of the spiritual work for certain guides is just to create these physical communities where things are relatively fixed so that people who are adjusting to the fact that their thoughts can be instantly manifest won't be living in total chaos. So they try and make things sort of more fixed like it is in physical reality. So if you happen to think about an elephant, there's not immediately an elephant right there in front of you.
Okay. But that connects with the our knowledge of law of attraction and manifestation that we create with our minds, with our spirits. Mm-hmm. And so when we pass to spirit, it has to be more managed because you literally could create chaos by manifesting things immediately.
Yeah, we have pretty chaotic minds. Very few of us have that much discipline. And we're not used to thinking about our what we think of as being able to become physically manifest. And one of the things that's sort of interesting with this push towards, in physics, towards non-locality is the suggestion that maybe we do create things on a physical level more than we realize.
And
it would be prudent to sort of learn some of that self-discipline of thought.
And we've had fascinating discussion on previous shows as well about whether collectively we manifest everything, that collectively, almost that everything that happens, whether it's the economy or the environment, that it's an accumulation of our collective manifestation in effect. We've debated that quite recently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know, Dr. Heath, that Maureen was on mute before, but she is with us now, and I know Maureen has a question for you as well, if you don't mind.
Yes. Hi. I'm sorry about what happened last time. I was mutated myself. I do know that we all, the teachings of Carl Jung, talk about how we all have a psychic inheritance we're all born with. And so we're all collectively connected with that. But, I also just think for me, to think about the existence of energy, because we're all energy, as you're an expertise in this, but it can be altered but never destroyed. So it's not difficult to conceive of those recently deceased or existing in a different form. To me, anyway, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't see why anybody else doesn't see it my way. I mean,
so what's your question?
It's proof's in the pudding. I mean, I know you've been talking a little bit about this, but I mean, don't you kind of feel that? I don't know. It's kind of like we're energy, proof's in the pudding. There you have it. It's just still exists in a different form.
Well, energy exists, but I think where people argue is, does that energy maintain some kind of continuity between one lifetime and the next? And that's not clear. And if so, what kind of continuity? Does it maintain a discrete personality? Does it have elements of a personality? We still don't really know all that well precisely in what manner that energy persists. Because
the
energy
science
could persist without it being personality or a soul.
Right. I appreciate that. Well, you know what it is? I don't know if we'll ever be able to, right now, scientifically, it can't be proved what area that you're talking about is what I hear you saying, maybe. We're not really sure. But it has been...
What I would say is this. We can't prove that consciousness exists inside a body.
Right.
So if we can't prove that it exists inside of a body, how are we going to prove that it exists outside a body?
I like that. That's excellent.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. That was a very good answer to, I mean, statement as well. Thank you. That kind of sums it up.
Thank you, Maureen. But do you think, Dr. Heath, that we will prove it someday?
Yeah, but I guess I don't worry about it that much. I don't get stuck on proof. You know, I've seen parapsychologists for over a century really struggled to prove to the world this stuff exists. And in fact, I saw a recent quote by a skeptic, Richard Weissman, that was saying, well, by any other standard of science, you've proved that it exists, but this is extraordinary, so therefore you need a more extraordinary proof. And of course, parapsychologists just started laughing. He said, you've just said, by any normal science, we've proven our point. But most parapsychologists have realized...
Is he British or American?
The problem is one of a paradigm. It has to do with your basic worldview, and we're not going to ever change their worldview. If they're so stuck in that rut, that's just where they're going to be, and it's not my problem. So I worry more about helping people who are able to acknowledge their psychicness to be able to better integrate it into their lives in a healthy way than I am worried about proving anything to a skeptic, because I figure they'll find out on their own eventually, you know, just as all of us will when we pass on, and it's not my job to have to teach them.
Yeah, I love to, if I do a demonstration in public with a group of people, I always like to sort of go to the skeptic and give the skeptic really good evidence. It's just great with a group of people to find the skeptic and sort of say, you find a gentleman that's there clearly because his wife dragged him there, and say, you're here because your wife brought you and you don't believe in this. And I think skeptics play an important role. But we're going to take a very short commercial break, Dr. Heath, and we'll be back to continue our discussion.
All right.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Well, welcome back, Dr. Heath. And I wanted to ask you at this stage, when we pass the spirit, can we still visit the living? So can we go and see our relatives? I know often that speaking to clients giving readings that people in spirit often say, well, I was around them and I know that they bought this new piece of furniture, so they'll give evidence. But have you found in your research and your work that there is evidence to substantiate that people do visit us from the spirit world?
Yeah, I'm not sure I could say there's evidence per se, but I do believe from the channeled messages that it is not uncommon for people to come back, especially for funerals, but also to visit the living. Sometimes it's just to pass on messages to make sure that people know that they're okay. I mean, gosh, how many people have you heard who remember either some loved one's smell or a message or a brief vision of that loved one, especially in dreams, just saying, look, I'm okay, just, you know, I promised you I'd let you know I'm okay, and I'm okay now, and take care, and still love you, bye. Very common to get those messages. There are some spirits who say they can't come back right away for different reasons. Sometimes it's because they need extra time to recover from a really tough illness before they pass. Sometimes it's because they feel like they would get dragged back into the emotions of the living, and they need to separate themselves out for a while to stabilize before they can do that. I think the other thing is that a lot more visits get made than people recognize, because it can be hard for the living to accept that someone they love has been there. I think you've seen that, haven't you? That people will have a dream or something, and they'll kind of blow it off as, oh, it didn't really happen. That was just wishful thinking. Or, oh, yeah, I smelled a cigar, but, you know, that was just wishful thinking. And so there can be a lot of denial from the living.
No, it's just fascinating. I know that Res Miranda had a question for you as well, Dr. Heath. Res Miranda, what's your question?
Hi, thank you, Steve. Dr. Heath, it's an honor to speak with you.
Well, thank you.
I was just wondering, we have, going back to the communication methods and who believes and who doesn't, I'm with you. I couldn't care less what anybody else believes. I've had all the proof I need. But we have a chat room full of paranormal investigators at the moment, for the most part. And they're trying to do just that. They're trying to find some kind of proof of the afterlife, tangible proof that we can share, that they can share with us, so we can know what's going on. And as you know, most of them use equipment like a ghost box or, you know, voice-activated recorders and EMF detectors and stuff like that. Do you think that that's a proper way or an effective way to go about communication?
Well, it may be a way to go about communication, but it's never going to be proof. Any more than photos are. And the reason doesn't even have to do with how easy stuff is to fake. It has to do with the fact that human beings are perfectly capable of mind-matter interaction. Okay, that's the ability of your unconscious mind or your conscious mind to physically affect equipment. And, of course, you're hoping that the ghost is using their ability to affect the equipment, but there is just no way to prove that it's not you doing it yourself.
Oh, wow. Yeah, interesting.
You know, because, and especially for those who are doing ghost investigations who desperately want to get proof, even if they're consciously not trying to mess with their own equipment, all it takes is unconscious desire to get proof. And you've got everything the spirit has. So there's just no way to prove who's doing what.
Oh, so you're really fighting it out on the same frequencies, maybe.
Well, you have the same abilities, and you're using the same technique. There's just no way to know who's responsible for any finding. So I say, you know, I mean, I finally got to the point where I stopped carrying equipment at all, and I just started. I'm more focused on trying to help people, whether living or dead. I spend a lot of time counseling or talking to folks, especially the dead. Most of the time what they need is to understand what's going on to them and get reoriented, and then, you know, if you can connect them up with their guides, they can move on and that kind of stuff.
So would you say that it's more important for us to perhaps develop our psychic ability and our ability to communicate that way, and as you mentioned before, kind of lose the border of our own selves, so to speak? Would that be maybe a more effective pursuit?
Well, it's just people need to recognize that equipment is not at the point yet where it can provide proof. And I know there are some very fine paranormal enthusiast physicists out there who are busy building different types of equipment, and they're hoping to be able to find better ways of measuring this stuff.
Yeah.
And perhaps they will. But given that we can affect computers and everything else, you know, known to man, equipment-wise, with mind-matter interaction, I don't see how we're ever going to be able to 100% prove what's responsible for what. So I just say, let's focus on how we can help people if they're stuck. Or the other thing I've seen sometimes is that you'll see a spirit that's at a place not because it's stuck, and not because it's necessarily a guide, although I've seen plenty of guides there, but sometimes they come back for their life review. There's something about being in a physical location where you live that seems to help them go into a deeper level of their life review, self-judgment. And so sometimes I've seen them come back with guides as part of their life review.
And oh, my. I never thought of that.
They don't need to be moved on. They're doing their own work. Leave them alone. Let them do their work, you know.
Wow.
But that's something to be aware of that I don't see people talk about very often.
That is very interesting. Well, thank you. I'm going to have a different perspective on that from now on. I appreciate your answer.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you, Rosamaranda. And it leads us to another really interesting question, Dr. Heath, which is, how can we help spirits to pass on effectively? So sometimes they do need help, and wants to ask you, what can we do as psychics, as mediums, as individuals to help spirits that are stuck?
Well, the last part of the book is my talking about different ways we can help spirits move on as well as connect. And I talk about it both for those who are not psychic and those who are psychic. But I think for either group, part of it is you need to be clear yourself and grounded and sort of balanced. Where I see psychics sometimes have trouble moving spirits on is when on some level they have an unconscious desire to keep them there. Maybe because they like having someone they can connect with or talk to, or, I mean, it's sort of interesting, but sometimes there's some what psychologists would call secondary gain from keeping spirits in place, and that can cause them to be stuck. Most of the time what spirits really need is just to be oriented, to explain to them, yep, sorry, you are dead, it's time to move on. Look, there's guides around you, just listen for them. And almost every psychic does do a certain amount of this work. Where I suppose I have fun is I do get creative sometimes. Every once in a while, I will run into a situation where you have spirits who are bullies. I mean, they have the same personalities as they did when they were living, and some of them like to bully other ghosts and keep them from going to the light. And I just say, let's see you stop them when there's 1,000 doorways to the light open at the same instant.
That's a really interesting point, because I often, in a reading, a mediumship reading, I'll often start by describing the personality of the person in spirit. And clients often say, so does the person continue to have the same personality? And my response is always, well, based upon my experience in my work, yes, they do continue to have their personality. It's not as though you pass the spirit and all of a sudden you become perfect. We still have our characteristics and our good and bad traits.
Right. Where that starts to change is after the life review and self-judgment, and when they start doing spiritual work. It's sort of interesting. There was one spirit who was part of his spiritual work was to communicate back to the living, and so he did communications for several months.
But I haven't had any issues. It's been great until just now.
There may be a little mind matter interaction going on here.
I wanted to ask her
too,
about physical mediumship or her experiences sitting in a physical mediumship circle.
Right, that would be really good. I like that. And I think you had a question, too, that would be awesome. I think it was the very last, like, what are the best ways to make contact with people who passed on?
Yeah.
I think if you're psychic,
oh, we've got you back.
You know, it's easier because of meditation. But if you're not psychic or you don't think of yourself as psychic, because your point was good, everybody has this ability. It's universal. I think the easiest way for people is in dreams. And to keep a journal by your bedside, so as you go off to sleep, sort of invite whoever you want to see come visit, to come visit you. And then when you first wake up, before you're really alert, write down what you remember of your dreams, because there's something that psychologists talk about called state-specific learning, that you may remember it very clearly when you're sleepy, And then when you shift to a normal state of consciousness, it'll be totally gone. So you want to keep
that
journal by your bed so you can write
it
down.
I often wake up at a certain time in the night and remember very vivid conversations with spirit guides, and it's just so so incredibly clear. And I regularly wake up as well, having been to school and remembering teachers that have come into the classroom and given lectures on spiritualism and all kinds of different things, but waking up remembering what was said, but then somehow when you've woken up fully and during the day, it doesn't seem as real.
You got to write it down right away. Quick as you can. I mean, I think it's even easier than doing a voice recorder. And if nothing else, try and jot down a few vivid images, because sometimes you can pull a dream back from just a few vivid images. But I think that's the easiest way for people who don't think of themselves as psychic. I think meditation is a great way for self-development. The one thing I would warn people of is that you are opening the door to the unconscious mind. And not only psychic information resides there, you'll also have a lot of your own psychological baggage that comes up. And unless you want to distort the psychic information you get, you really need to work on your stuff. And I do recommend finding a professional therapist or counselor to work with as you're doing your spiritual self-development, because I think you'll go a lot farther if you can be working on those two different levels, your own issues and then allowing information to come in from guides and other sources.
Now that's fascinating, because I've always said as well that, you know, we have a responsibility to constantly improve ourselves and constantly address our issues and be the best we can be. And I wanted to, before we end the end, Dr. Heath, I did want to ask you, before we had a technical problem there, you were talking about sitting in physical mediumship circles, and I'm fascinated by physical mediumship. And I wanted to ask you, if you could give us an example of physical mediumship, an experience that you've had, sitting in a physical mediumship circle.
Oh, my favorite was chasing a table around the room. We had a big, heavy table that were about eight of us carried together into this living room. And we were getting wraps and other things. And one of them asked her mother, who'd passed to the other side, if she would, you know, move the table a little. And all of a sudden, we were running after this table. This table was flying all over the room. It was a hoot, because all of us, I mean, we were in Florida. We had shirt sleeves on. I mean, our hands were on top of the table. It was very clear we were not lifting this table, and it was just, it was really booking that table.
Wow.
The other sort of fun thing I saw was somebody channeled a person, and I watched the silhouette of her face change. It actually changed.
That's fascinating. I've seen channeling as well. When I can't think of the word actually. Is it trans? There's a term for it. I can't remember. Shadowing, isn't it?
In trance when it happens, but it just. I mean, I had a lot of fun, and it was before I even got into parapsychology, and I often thought that was a wonderful background, because it helped me understand that this stuff is real, and you know, you'll run into situations where there is fraud or trickery going on, but this stuff does exist, and it can happen.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. Well, it's been so interesting to have you on the show, Dr. Heath. I was excited about this evening, because I know you've got a huge amount of experience and knowledge, and we're just so grateful for you taking the time to join us and share your experiences and awareness with us.
Well, you guys are doing good work, too. And, you know, I just think we're all here to work together.
Yes.
And you're doing your work. And that's, you know, that's all anyone can ask.
Well, wonderful. Thank you. And we appreciate you. And we know you do wonderful work. We'll be excited to hear about your new book. Can you just remind us of the title of your new book, Dr. Heath, and let us know when it's due to be published?
It was due last year. It's called Mind Matter Interaction. It's going to be put out by McFarland Publishers, and it's all the stories, the research, what the experience is like for those who do it. I'm guessing it'll probably be out in March, would be my guess. I'm working on the index now. I've got the proofs back to them, but they're in Christmas mode. So, like I say, I think it's going to be a few months before they actually get it. If you go to my website at www.pamelaheath.com, you can get more information about it.
Wonderful, Dr. Heath. I'll be definitely be getting a copy of that when it's published. And we thank you once again and wish you all the very best with your work and your new book. It's been an absolute honor to have you with us on the show. So thank you for being here.
Happy to be back anytime. Maybe when Mercury's not in retrograde.
Yeah, we would definitely like you to come back. You've been a fantastic guest. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Okay, now, as Dr. Heath said, if you would like more information about her work, you can visit her website, which is PamelaHeath.com. And also, we have information about Dr. Heath on our guest page at PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. And you can also find out about all of our other guests. I'm really excited that we've got some wonderful guests coming up. On January the 13th, we have John Holland joining us. So that's going to be a fantastic show. I'm really excited about that one. Wonderful. Now, I'd like to make a few announcements. I think we need to go to another commercial break, actually. I just want to check if we do or not. I know that we had one relatively recently, but we usually run two breaks. But just as I check on that, I just want to remind you guys all to check out psychicbloggers.com. It's a fantastic website that has blogs from all of the psychics at psychicaccess.com. So you can learn there about everything from reincarnation to psychic development and so many other things. So do check it out. You're very welcome to visit there and to absorb all of that information. Now, if you're interested in a reading from the best psychics on the internet, then you can visit psychicaccess.com, and you'll find there the very best verified psychics. We hire people that have really good talents and unique gifts, so come and check psychicaccess.com out. And all of our co-hosts, or all of our hosts, I should say, are also available on psychicaccess.com. And each psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about their work, and so that you can choose from the list of the psychics there at the website. And I know I really like working with psychicaccess.com because, you know, the site has a good reputation, and we really do have very high standards for our psychics. And I really enjoy working with Doug as well, and he takes care of psychicaccess.com and all of the technical and organizational pieces of our radio show. So I want to thank Doug because he does wonderful work, and I always know that with Psychic Access I'm associated with a really credible site that has great integrity. So, also be aware that we on psychicaccess.com, site owners and webmasters can earn 50 cents a minute on every reading for traffic that they refer through to psychicaccess.com. And if you'd like to learn more about that, then you can visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. Okay, now if you like our show, we want to invite you to tell your friends about it. You can join us in the chat room, or they can join us in the chat room as well. And you can also find all of our shows archived on the psychicview.com. So feel free to send those links on to your friends by email or on Facebook. There really is something for everybody, so please help us to spread the word. We really appreciate it. Now I'm going to give the number out for the free readings. We'll be talking a little bit more and then taking calls from listeners. So I'll give you the number now and remind you again later on. It's 724-444-4851. Okay. Now, Alora, I wanted to ask you, do you think that near-death experiences and spirituality are connected?
Yeah, they seem to be, and even based on studies done, they seem to be. Many people experience near-death experiences talk about a changed spiritual perspective after experiencing the near-death experience, and it's irrespective of their religion. So often a near-death experience brings on the experience of the feeling of love and the conscious exercise of free will to bring one closer to God. Bear in mind that this is irrespective, again, of one's belief or religion. In some studies, spirituality was the changed belief that the majority of near-death experience people or people experience near-death experiences mentioned, okay, a changed belief. That was the majority of them. Comments that were played, and this is in studies that were done, scientific studies. Comments that were placed in this category were things like, I've learned to forgive, I am profoundly aware of the oneness of all, the presence of God, and that all of creation is spirit, or I realize that life is too short to worry about things, to love humanity, I have more compassion now, I don't feel afraid of death, life is a precious gift. The individual I was before, the individual I was before, that experience is gone. In other words, they're more of the we mentality. So others commented on God by saying, now I know there's a God, there's definitely a living God, no matter what anybody calls God, or they'll say, I've become closer to God and have no doubts about what lies beyond this world for us. The comments had more of a feeling of oneness, connection, universality, unconditional love, and talked about God in a manner that was non-specific to any one religion.
Well, thank you, Alora. It's absolutely fascinating. You always have such good observations. Now, we're going to take our second commercial break, Alora, and then we'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
Every Tuesday night, check out Miami Town Ghost Talk on the People's TV Network and ASPRN.com at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Miami Town Ghost Talk is hosted by Mike and Jeff, the authors of Haunted Cincinnati and Southwest Ohio, and the co-founders of Miami Town Ghost Tours. Miami Town Ghost Talk will delve into all aspects of the paranormal, from cryptozoology, UFOs, to ghosts and spirits, talking to authors, investigators, and so much more. So be sure to check out Miami Town Ghost Talk every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at ASPRN.com and PeoplesTVNetwork.com at BTN Radio.
Okay, and Maureen, I wanted to ask you as well about the existence of energy. So we say that energy can be altered but never destroyed. Could you just share your views on that with us?
Well, you know, I did ask her about that already, and so I wanted to go, because, you know, remember I did talk to your guest, lovely guest, by the way, and as we all say, and I did talk to her about that, so I really don't need to point in that direction, but I would like to share, and this has to do with the question that Jen had in the chat room on the psychic access side. She asked a question that was very interesting, and one of my stories goes right in. A short story will help answer that, her question, I think. She wanted to know when you know, a loved one passes, are they always around? Will they always be around? And so I do have a little story I could, if that's okay with you, Steve.
Absolutely. Would love to hear it, Maureen. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think it'll help answer. Jen had a question for the guests, and so she didn't answer. Anyway, I wanted to tell you, first of all, I'm going to just talk real quickly about my grandmother. Because Jen, her father died in March. So I'm going on my grandmother. And the fact is, I don't believe in anything. I just know what I know. And I do know that my grandmother, when she died, and she was my granny type. Anyway, she did, I became real close to her when she was very old. She was in a home, and that's, I didn't like her much when I was younger. She wasn't all that fun. But anyway, I got very close to her when she was, you know, to her last months of her life. And it was amazing to be around her, and it was amazing. And she couldn't say goodbye when she was trying to say. Well, she died that evening. She came into my dreams. It's not like I had a ghost hovering over me, but she said, I want you to make sure you take care of my son, which is my father. Well, ironically, I am and this is like 20, 30 years later, I am the caregiver of my parents by choice, which I never thought would happen in a million years. My grandmother she's not always around. It's not like she comes and says, hey, hi, or I see her or whatever, but when my father's been very, very ill, and because I am the connection with my father. It's because I am, everybody's heard my story about me and my dad and caregiving. My grandmother, it's interesting, I had this experience. I could smell when this was like 10 years ago. He was really bad off, and I could smell my grandmother. I think I've talked about it even before, her Avon, the disgusting Avon perfume that you roll on. that smell of her. It was awful. But there, I'm trying to say she'll present herself when the time is needed. And she was worried about my father. And my father smelled it. My daughter was with me, and we were like, whoa. And it was interesting because we looked all over the place, and it was my grandmother. She was there. She came around because she was needed. My father needed her, although he didn't know he needed her. But the way I look at it, all I say is now, my dad's been very ill. I just say, Dad, I haven't smelt your mother lately. So, but she does it. She does. And then there's, I'll talk later if we have time about the other stories. But I wanted to address that, and hopefully it helped Jen in our chat room. So, if you have time, I'll talk about those other two ones later. But that's all I wanted to say right now.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Maureen. Thanks for sharing that. What are your thoughts, Rosa Miranda?
Oh, I think it's so exciting that we talk about afterlife communication in depth. And what's wonderful to me is that we're talking more and more about how those that have passed over, we're not talking about them so much as being so far away. I really believe in the theory of parallel universes, and that they're right here with us, next to us, all the time, and we them, and if we just learn how to use our own frequencies and whatnot, we can really talk to them. It's not, it shouldn't be a scary thing. A lot of civilizations, a lot of cultures don't view things like talking with spirits as a scary, ghosty kind of stories or lore, the Native Americans, for one thing, a lot of the Asian cultures, aside from spiritualists, believe that this is something we should be doing and that we don't need to be afraid of, So
actually, one thing I found with the Native people is, they hold their ancestors so sacred. Mm-hmm. And even though they know they exist, or they believe in different realms, they don't necessarily, they'll pray for protection from, they'll call in their ancestors and things of that nature, but they don't generally, out of respect, try to contact them for communication purposes. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. You won't find running around Native burial grounds with DVR.
Right,
guys,
exactly.
Is that because if we call upon loved ones in spirit, we disturb them or we interfere with their work?
I don't know. And that's a good question, because I didn't really ask why per se. I just think that it's out of respect.
Okay.
That's the feeling I got from it.
Okay, I'll have to research that, because I increasingly in readings I'll say to clients now, just give me the name of the people you want to communicate with or you want evidence from in spirit, and let's call upon them, and they always come and they always give good evidence.
Right.
But
now
maybe
we
shouldn't do that. I'll have to look at that.
Well, I think if you ask them, that's okay. I'm just sharing with you some of the other cultural, because Rez mentioned the Native people. If you were dealing with a Native person, I think I would be very, I'd walk carefully and ask them if that would be okay with them first.
Oh, okay.
Being culturally sensitive. Yeah, sensitive to that particular thing. Now, I personally also feel perfectly fine speaking to my grandmother. The people have passed on. That's not an issue. But we knew before they passed on that's something that, we had discussed that they would want or they would like. But I feel comfortable with that. But not all cultures might. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so we need to just be mindful of that if we have a client that's Native American, for example.
Right, exactly. I just want to share, I just recently found that out, so I just thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I hadn't heard of that before. I live on land that was Native American Indian that I live not too far from an old hospital, and apparently the area that I live on was a battleground. I always seem to end up on battlegrounds, because when I lived in North Wales, I lived in an area where there was a big sort of civil dispute in the 1600s. But it doesn't bother me. It always seems to work out well. Maureen, have you got any other stories to share?
Yeah, yes, I do. In fact, these are very special ones, and one very weird, well, cool one. I had two friends that died in 1998, and they were young, and I knew them all my life. You know, I grew up with them. They died 3 weeks apart, but they're both so different. But what happened is, I would get to, throughout the few years after that, and once in a while now, I would get these visits. And one girl, Arena, and she was like, Arena was a woman of a woman. She was all woman and a party animal. And she loved life and the red lipstick. And it was always like, she's just something. And I'm sad how she died. But the thing about what, she would visit me. And you know, it was almost like the visit I had with her was the most greatest time. It was in my sleeping. It's my sleeping state. It was that state she'd visit. And I would wake up so happy and so, like I'd been on a great holiday, you know, and that's how it was with her. But then another friend of mine, Zachary, very dear friend, he died, and he was a very stressful, intense, but always stressful. He stressed about everything and tormented, a little bit tormented, and I loved him dearly. And he would visit my dreams, and it was always so much, I mean, draining. It was draining for me, and it was like he was in another area. He wasn't in the physical world, but he still wasn't together. He was still the same, carrying it into the same, dwelling in the same stress. It wasn't so much what it was happening, but the feeling I got. But then years after that, 3 years later, he visited me again, and he was really calm, and we were waiting for a doctor's appointment in this dream. And he said, and his name was Hill, my last name's Holleran. So my name would come after his and alphabetically, and he'd say, I said, Zach, what are we doing here? And he goes, he was really calm. And I go, what's wrong with you? Why are you so calm? It bothered me. And he says, I'm not calm. I'm just me. And I go, and then I got annoyed. And I go, well, the doctor's going to be calling. He goes, no, the doctor is for you, Maureen. I go, but your name comes before me. He goes, no, Maureen, you must listen to what I'm saying. The doctor is for you. And I woke up and I found out 2 weeks later I had a liver disease. And it was unbeknownst to me, it had been going on 20 years. And I did get to the doctor, but it was like all, you know, like there was something to it. I just think there was something to why he was so calming in that one. And I haven't had a visit from him since.
Well, that's fascinating. And you know, it's similar to what Dr. Heath was saying about the fact that when we pass, we pass with our personalities, our psychological baggage. And then once we've recuperated and done the life review, we start to address some of that baggage. So perhaps when he came back calm 3 years later, he'd addressed some of his baggage and was a calmer person.
Absolutely. And you know, that's very true what she's saying. And also my friend Rena, all the time she would visit me, like she was fun, but she didn't know that she was dead or that she had passed. She had no clue in the whole dream. I had a great time. I just went with it, but I have not had any. I have not had any connection with her in many years, or maybe 2 years since. So maybe she's all okay and she's gone off to her thing. But she had no clue. So she was fun though. But yeah, interesting. Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. Fascinating. You've always got great stories to share, Maureen.
They're true.
And Allura. We had another question for you. And I wanted to ask you, what happens during a near-death experience life review?
Well, what I found, according to studies made with regard to near-death experiences, is when a person experienced a life review, inevitably there were profound changes. The life review shows people what is important to us, you know, after we pass on, and generally high priority values were those of kindness, compassion, and unconditional love for others. Low priority values were money, competition, and power. What is our world full of? Money, competition, and power, right? So I thought that was very interesting. Charles Flynn quoted a person who had a near-death experience in his study as saying, "The superficial aspects of my life, what I had accomplished, owned and known, were consumed and rendered unimportant. However, those acts in which I selflessly expressed love or concern for my fellow men were glorified and prudently inscribed in the record with total disregard for however humble or fleeting those moments had been." Interesting.
Fascinating.
It's just fascinating. Yeah.
We could talk about all these things forever. It's just, I find that, with spiritual work, there's just so much to explore. It's incredible. I thought to myself, when I was working full-time in a corporation and I decided to work for myself doing spiritual work full-time, I thought, gosh, I wonder if, after a period of time, you sort of run out of things to look at or explore. And I was so wrong with that thought, because there is so much to learn in the spiritual realm. It's fascinating.
It is. I mean, it's so general where you can bring it down to basics like love, compassion, all those things. But there's so many different layers and levels and expansions that I find it's never ending, and it's amazing. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Well, I'm sure we'll be taking some calls shortly. We've got a lot of people in the chat room, and we'll get ourselves connected to take calls as well. But before we start doing that, I just wanted to remind people of the call-in number. The number to call in for a free reading is 724-444-4851. When you do call in, we only have a short amount of time per person, so if you can tell us your name, where you're calling from, and give us your question, then we'll get working straight away with our guides to answer your question as best we can. And when you do call in, just remember that the calls that go on hold automatically, nobody answers them, so just relax and listen to the show whilst you're waiting, and we'll speak to you when you are on air. Okay, so hopefully we'll be able to take calls shortly. I know that we do also need to take another commercial break in a moment. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you, Res Miranda, to tell us your thoughts again, because I know you always have great things to say and great things to share.
Oh, well, my goodness. Well, I think that I'm excited about more and more people wanting to learn how to communicate with the spirit world, and I wish that we would become more and more comfortable doing that. One of the things that I love that we all do on Psychic Access and in our private practices is help other people learn how to do that, help you feel comfortable with the spirit world and with psychic topics and metaphysical subjects and stuff like that. We're not just human magic eight balls. We want to be there for you and help be that connection and that bridge for you. So I just, that excites me, and to know, the more I think about it and the more we learn about it, the more we know that the reality that we don't end. That's what's amazing for me. We don't end. So therefore, that implies neither does the effect that we have on others, whether that's good or bad. As the saying goes, it's not there are two dates on a tombstone, but it's the dash in the middle that counts. And that's absolutely, I think, what we're all here for. And it just, think about it. Even when you have a paranormal experience, and I've had a bunch, as we all have here, just to think, when that's going on, one of the things that I noticed when I was having a particular experience, it seems as though all I could think of was, wow, this is really happening. I wasn't excited. I wasn't scared. I was just, I guess, dumbfounded would be the word, A particular instance where I saw a key in my front door slowly turn one way and then the other, and then some things happened after that. But all I could do was just stand there and say, my God, this is really happening. And it was broad daylight, and it was in the middle of winter, So it is just, you know, there is more Virginia to this world than we can see with our and experience with our tangible senses, and it just amazes me all the time.
It's exciting and very calming as well. You know, your point about time just makes me feel very calm when I think that we do go on forever. There isn't an end point. It just puts things in perspective and calms me down.
Yeah, doesn't it just take the pressure off, you know?
Yes.
You're not going to run out of time.
You know, it's true. And the other message, I think, is that we're never alone. I was many, many years ago living in South Africa, and I was going through a very, very difficult divorce far away from home because I'm from the United States, all alone. I felt very alone. And one day I was driving in my car, and all of a sudden I just had this very spontaneous spiritual experience where I knew I was never alone, like never alone. And it was the most amazing feeling. I can't even describe it. It was just knowing that everything was fine, everything would be fine, everything will always be fine, and that you're never alone.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that cool?
I get shivers, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
And also, just talking about shivers, there's a listener called Jen in the chat room just saying that you, in fact, Laura, just answered a question that she has, but she didn't have, she hadn't asked. So she was wanting to ask the question, but hadn't yet asked it. And you've just apparently answered that question, so we're definitely in sync.
Good deal. Oh, I'm glad.
Jen also has a question, a health-related question for us. She's saying that she's little troubled. She thinks that there may be something wrong with her liver, and she was considering getting that checked up. So she was asking us that question, and I always, in response to that kind of question about health, I always say yes, absolutely. If you have a feeling that something needs to be checked, then absolutely go ahead and speak to an expert to get that checked.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Was talking. When Jen heard the story about my friend when he visited me, and I do have a real chronic. I'm not going to go into it, and I would not have known, but I had it for 25 years with no knowledge of it. But it takes. She said that it might be. It was after hearing that story, she said that it might be a sign. I said to go get it checked. It's very easy. Just normal blood work will show if something's elevated. I'm not going to go into it, but it's a very easy thing to do because that was my thing. No one ever checked it because when I had my child, it wasn't being checked when I was 1991. They didn't have a checking for it, anything like that, whatever. So I would hate to see somebody wait it out like I did. If I had no, I did not know. It could have been, 25 years go by and I had this thing, whatever. I'm not crying. I'm not crying. I'm okay. But that's... I told her to go ask her doctor. She has a feeling, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
I always just trust my instinct when it comes to, well, pretty much everything. But if you get a vibe that you need to get something checked out, then you absolutely should. So.
And I also got that if for no other reason, just to put her own mind at ease, she should.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's
absolutely.
What I felt.
Now we'll take more questions from the chat rooms because we're not able to take telephone calls this evening. There's an issue with the telephone system. Again, Mercury in retrograde.
Yeah, it's rearing its ugly head, and we all know it. So
I know. And you say it's lasting until the 30th of December, Maureen.
Yes, it is. It started on the 14th. The 10th, actually. But there'll be a little bit of highers and lowers. Just hang in there. You know what? Bless its heart and just and be nice. Just look at it that way. But it has been a real problem for a lot of people. I heard. Me too.
Yeah. We have a question, actually, Maureen, from the chat room. And it's not a reading question as such, but more of a general question from Beth. Beth's saying, you know, we've talked about the afterlife and communicating with people in the afterlife. And she's asking, can children communicate with the lives before they're born. Now, I have a view on this based upon some experiences, but before I've talked a lot because I've been hosting documents. I'll be quiet and let you guys share your observations.
Yeah. You know, I have something to say about that because I lost a child when she was 6 months old. Well, 6 months along in me, okay? So is that what she's asking? I hear. So she is kind of asking about that. So can children before they are born communicate? Now, I felt that my child was able to, but although she wasn't able to make it, and I think she bailed out for good. I think she stepped out for a reason, maybe, the way I look at it now, because I would have never had my child Mariah now. And maybe I wasn't her right mother. Maybe that she thought maybe Mariah should. I have to see it that way. I don't believe it. I just know it. I guess so. I feel that absolutely is true.
I also have something to add to that if you'd like.
Yeah.
If that's all right, Steve. You ask if children can communicate with us before they're born. I will tell you, my son is now 17, and when I was pregnant with my son, yes, we communicated together, very much so. And I very specifically intended to do that. And, you know, he showed me who he is, what his name was, that he is a boy, and we would talk together, and he looked just like he does. And there are all kinds of things that, you know, other family members that came into play every once in a while. His dad and I could not, I really don't feel the need. I believe that a child comes in with a name they're intended to come in with, and that name has a certain vibration that's important for their lives. And so I don't go into books necessarily, but my ex-husband at the time, when I was married to my son's dad, he was big on that. And we were able to agree on a girl's name, but I knew I wasn't going to have a girl. I knew I was going to have a boy. And he just couldn't find a boy's name. And when I was 3 months pregnant, I had a dream about my son. He was writing his name on a chalkboard. He was playing with the truck and all. I thought, oh gosh, and my ex-husband doesn't believe in any of this psychic stuff. And so I knew I couldn't tell him about the dream. I always have to make it sound logical. And anyway, I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to tell him? What am I going to say? Because my son showed me his name. And it's a very unusual name. And so I thought, oh well, I'm just going to tell him. So I told him, I had a dream. This is the name. And he said, oh yeah, I like that name. And so that was the one, is the one our son gave us anyway. But so yes, with the experience that I have had, I would say absolutely without a shadow of a doubt. And when you're pregnant, it's very easy to commute because you're so connected with them on every aspect. You know, you're physically connected with them because you're carrying them physically, mentally and emotionally. You have that protective instinct, and spiritually, you're very connected to your baby. So it's easy to communicate with them before they're born. But that's my personal experience. But anyway, that's it. I just wanted to explain.
That's really nice.
Mother's cool. Intuition kicks in, doesn't it? It just happens.
It's so cool.
Jen in the chat room has a question for us, actually, about her father. She's asking if we feel the presence of her father with us this evening. She lost her father in March, apparently. Any sense on that, guys? I'm happy to read for Jen, but again, as I'm primary host this evening, I don't want to dominate.
Okay, yes, I understand. And there's another question I want to catch for the other side that's very, very important. So,
but that might be a good one for you, Steve, that what she asked. Yes. I don't know. It might be, Steve, what she asked, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, because I'm gay. Yeah. Warren, you've outed me on a radio show. No, I'm only joking because I'm very open about myself.
I know. I adore you. I adore you.
So Jen would like to know if her dad is with her or around.
Yes, because he just... Yeah, he just passed away in March.
I can feel Jen's dad here strongly. And he gives the number 15 for some reason. You know, I and I often find that people in spirit give numbers that are significant to them. So I'm not sure whether he was born on the 15th or the 15th was an important anniversary or passing, but he gives the number 15 for Jen, and it must have some significance for her moving forward as well. So possibly a lucky number to look out for. But also, when I ask him to provide information, he talks of woodwork, and I see a in the UK we call it a saw. I'm not sure if do you use the word saw in the States, guys?
You know,
saw wood, and I see him sawing wood, and just this talk of trees and felling trees and a saw, and I see this beautiful sort of cabin style home as well, and feel that he wants to build this home in spirit. So I know we haven't got Jen on the telephone line with us to interact and ask her if that makes sense. But that's what I'm feeling.
I'm also feeling something. I feel yes, his presence is very much there, Jen. However, what I want to say is, no, not however, because that makes it sound like, but there's a but. There's no but. He is very strong around you. And I think that his passing on has raised some questions for you about the afterlife and passing on and so forth. And because it's, and this is a growth experience for you, and because it's brought up these questions, that are so important for you to answer for yourself, for your own growth and moving forward, that it connects him to you and kind of keeps him here a little longer or around you a little longer. So once you go through the mourning period or the answering of your questions and you come to a place of peace, it will be easier for him to go back feeling that you're okay, you know, that you're in a good place with it. And that's going to be real important for him to move on and for you to move on. And so just so that you know, that would be important to bear in mind for both of you. Okay?
Thank you,
Rez had something, I think.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm blaming that psychically because I didn't type it into anything.
Yeah, really good.
Jen, I just a message for you. He wants you to know that he's still going to take care of you.
You know, that's beautiful, Rez.
Yeah, just have to know that, that's all. He wants you to know that because she said, who's going to take care of me now? You know, and he wants you to know he's still going to take care of you.
Yeah.
It's ongoing.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt. There's some questions that I'm getting that are not being typed in the main room at PTN. And so I do have two of those. I don't know what's going on. You know, I know it's kind of different when we do chat readings in the chat rooms just without phone. Do you want me to address what I'm getting over the side?
Sure, Maureen. Have you got Conchetta's question?
Yeah, I got her question, but there was Tammy was I got her question before, unless Conchetta put it in the main chat. She okay. might have done that already. But if that's the case, Conchetta, hold on. I'm sorry if that's the case, but Tammy's asking over at PTN, can you see a job soon? Not working, having much money trouble. What path should I be looking down? And this is from Tammy underscore JAX. And Conchita, I will get back to yours too because I'm not sure who was on that one.
That one I remember. Yeah, because
okay.
that was a general one.
Okay, and then,
so let's just re-answer the first question and then we'll move to Conchita's question.
Yes, and then we have another one on our side. Okay, yes, of course. Sounds good.
Okay, wonderful. Well, okay. I mean, guys, I'll just give you the what I get. I get March for the job. I feel very clear that by March there is an exciting opportunity. So that's what I've got in response to that question. How about you guys?
You know, I get a feeling that she has already been in too much commotion of the past work, and you didn't want to deal with all the drama anymore. And I get a feeling there's some new opportunity in the next 3 months probably is around the same time you just said March. Would that be almost? Also, is you were overqualified in the other job anyway, whether people wanted to tell you or not. I get a feeling in 3 months it would be March. Yes, I do too, as well. And it'll be around a new building, a new location, new building. And it'll be really a wonderful new, you'll have a really great feeling and a new attitude of a lot better attitudes, everything, a lot of things. And it's good, and you won't be hovered over by other people. But it's good, and I see you using your hands. And you'll be bringing in money later as time goes on. It's potentially very well. In material.
Yeah, and I want to back that up because I see you're swinging her purse, happy, like walking along with a stride. Very happy. So I see something coming along as well.
Okay, we also had a reading from, I think, also on besides Conchita, we have one from Julie on our side. I think Conchita, I don't know which one came first, you guys, so whatever you...
Well, actually, there's one, yeah, that was quite some time ago. What she was asking was, I guess it was a cousin or some relative of hers stepped forward and let his parents know that he is gay, and he's very, very depressed about it. He isn't eating, and she doesn't know, she wants to know how she can help him with this.
And who's this question? Conchita?
It might be Conchita. I can't remember the name of the person.
Yeah, because Julie's is different than that. So hold on, Julie. We'll get to you. Okay, Conchita then. All right.
Because that was asked quite some time ago.
Okay,
so
thank
Steve,
you.
I don't think I'm really as qualified as you might be to, because, you know, no, because I don't know what that's like. You know, I haven't had that.
Well, I you know, I'm happy to answer the question or give my view, because
yes.
I'm gay, and first thing
I'm sorry.
the first thing I would say is I always knew I was gay, so I'm not of the opinion that you choose your sexuality. I think if you choose your sexuality before you come into this lifetime, and I'm absolutely certain that I didn't make a choice in this lifetime, that I was always attracted to men. And I remember telling my mother, and I wasn't really worried about it. I was very fortunate. I come from a very open-minded family and open-minded community, and then moved to Knoxville, Tennessee. but it's a wonderful place to live. No, nothing
deep
against
south.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, deep south. But I remember when I told my mother, I actually told her at dinner, I was living in Brighton in the UK, and she came to stay with my stepfather, and we'd had some drinks at dinner, and she said, "Oh, you know, what's happening? You seem really happy." And I said, "Well, yeah, I've met somebody." And she said, "Okay, tell us." And I told her all about the person that I'd met, and she just threw her arms around me and said, "Oh, I'm so happy that you've met someone." And I remember her saying, "Do you know what? I always knew I didn't know you were gay, but I was always really impressed that you have really good taste with clothes and decor and things." So,
that was her response.
Yeah,
oh, that's good.
She said, "So it really makes sense." And then she said to me, "And I just want you to know that it's not relevant to me in any way at all. I absolutely love you unconditionally, and the only thing I care about is your health and your happiness, your success." And whenever anyone asks that question about sexuality, I'm always just drawn back to the words of my mother, and my answer therefore is the way to handle that situation is to tell the person that it's not relevant to you, that you
right.
you love them unconditionally. It's just not an issue. I was fortunate, as I said, because I was brought up in an area where it wasn't an issue, and I've never actually had any issues because of my sexuality, even where I live now. I don't draw in or energetically attract people that have an issue with it.
Because you're comfortable with it, I think. You accept yourself well.
Yeah, and I don't shout it from the rooftops, but equally I don't hide it. So yeah. I think that Conchetta can help by just expressing her love and saying it doesn't change a thing, and that she's proud of her nephew, I think it was, and excited about his future. And, you know, that's my response, but interested to see what you guys think as well. I always also say as well that, you know, we're all part of one thing. So we say spiritually we're all part of one thing. We all came from the same place. We're all going to the same place. We're all interconnected. So that's another way of saying, you know, how can we have an issue with each other's sexuality if we come from the belief that we're all part of one thing, because we're all one.
Mm-hmm. Right. My experience, I mean, now I am not gay, but my ex-brother-in-law is, and I was the first, he trusted me so much that he came to me before he went to any other family member and told me. And he has a lot, he accepts himself and his sexuality very easily, just like you do, Steve. And but he was concerned because his family is, I don't know, they're not very broad-minded people, we'll say. And he just started with me, and I'm, of course, very accepting and loving, and that really was irrelevant to me. And so I think with that, he just led his life the way he saw fit. I don't think he really necessarily came out and told them. He just acted on it, and they eventually figured it out. And no, he's now married. He's been, you know, because in the state that he lives in, they recognize gay marriage. And so obviously they can't deny it, but I guess he got to a point where it didn't matter to him what they thought. And so he just was himself, you know, and didn't care what anybody thought. You know, so just acceptance and love.
Wonderful. Thank you, Laura.
You know, Steve, there's. I'm trying to keep up with both of the chat. You know, it's hard because we have two. Everybody may not know, but we have two different rooms going on because we simulcast with PTN. And I'm trying to keep track because there are two, at least I see, questions in a Psychic Access Talk Radio side.
I do too.
Okay, same thing. And then we have a couple. Oh, I know we have at least one other in the other side. So I'm just trying to, you know, help out with this because I know it's kind of...
Oh, thank you, Maureen. Thank you. Appreciate that. So which question came first, Julie?
And then there's a Julie 84 after.
A Julie, yeah.
Yeah, okay, got it. So Julie 84, do you want me to read it for you, Steve? Or
yeah, please, Maureen, if you don't mind.
And this is another one that might be more Birelli. And Rez, you also, everybody. Do you see any... one, Julie. Do you see any guides around me? And if so... Do you know their names? Well, Steve, I hate to say it, or maybe I don't hate to say it, but you're pretty. You tune in very well to this, and I'm honest, I don't. So,
I see as soon as you ask that question, I see a gentleman, and I get the letter C, and when I listen more, I get the name Casper.
I see a gentleman too. I don't get a name though.
I see a gentleman with medium brown to darker hair, and I get the name Casper. It's and I always say to people, meditate about your guides as well, because when we meditate, when we're really calm, they draw very close to us, or we're able to see them and sense them much better. So I really encourage Julie to meditate. But there's definitely a gentleman there, and I get the name Casper quite clearly. How about you, Rez? Do you pick up anything for Julie?
Yes, I do. I would agree with you that it's a gentleman. I agree with you and Alora. I see a gentleman also. And I'm also seeing the sea, the ocean, the beach, water, sailing, just the ocean. So I would say to Julie, for you to become more acquainted with your guide and with your guides, that's where you need to be. If you can't physically be near the beach or water or rocks, and gosh, it's funny, I keep seeing it in, it's not a beach in California, and it's not a beach on the East Coast either. I'm seeing something like Scotland, the beach in Scotland. You know, so perhaps that's an ancestral connection for you. But if you can't be there physically, then definitely go there in your mind. Visualize, find yourself some pictures of a scene like that. Go there mentally and spiritually. Put some sounds on that, some recordings that sound like ocean waves, and be there, and you'll find that they will meet you there also. Talk you more, and you can write out what they say. I'm showing that if you ask them questions, if you have a pen and pencil and paper there, that you can, they'll give you things to write out. Don't edit it, don't second guess it, just write down whatever it is that comes to you. That might now sound really outlandish, but give it a try.
that's brilliant, Rez. And I was actually on a beach in Scotland, in the northeast of Scotland, just not too long ago, a couple of months ago. And a very good friend of mine lives up there, and she lives in a castle actually on near the beach up there. And I was speaking with her just today because she was in Dallas. So there's definitely a connection there, synchronicity.
Well, wow!
How neat!
Yeah.
And one Julie is saying as well that in the chat room, she just said that did she say that she lives on a beach? I thought I saw her
saying.
Oh,
yeah, it might be. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Steve, and a name helps. I wonder if it's the beach I live on. How interesting. Yeah. What beach? What's the name? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is it a rocky beach? Lots of rocks, like, you know, up north? Usually Monterey, Santa Cruz, that kind of area have rocky beaches that looks like beaches on Scotland, too.
Yeah.
But that's where you need to go, Julie.
How neat. That's neat. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. There was another question as well. Hang on. I'm going to get this. And this was Julie 84. I have had wonderful readings from psychics on psychicaccess.com, and they've told me that my ex, Kaylin, is going to come back to me. My question is, when will she be back? And how is she feeling at this moment? Is she doing okay or having a hard time? Those are a lot of questions. So I guess the first question would be, when will she be back, and how is she feeling at this moment?
Guys, I can read.
Go for it. Go for it.
Well, I get spring very clearly. I get April, May, and when I get 2 months, when my guides give me 2 months together like that, it means towards the end of 1 month or at the beginning of the following month. So I get April, May, so with end of April, beginning of June. But there's a lot of healing to be done in that situation. There's really quite a lot of work for these two people to do individually before they're able to come back together. There's quite a lot of water under the bridge to really resolve. But there's clearly a lot of love there. And, yeah, I get the time frame April, May, so spring.
And I get something interesting here for you. It looks like just recently, either one or the other, I am going on her maybe, just has recently finally freed herself from her own self-imprisonment. As you know, I have done that for myself before as well. But I do get a feeling that there's going to be a really good family connection. It's really important. The family has to be okay. There's a family reunion, and it's happening at this time period. And that brings in a lot of forgiveness or soothing. Wow. So much more soothing. I do see celebrations with you two and another female friend. It's really happy celebrating, I feel, is a new beginning or restarting, because the family looks okay and not so, you don't feel, it's freedom. There's liberation with this relationship. It looks positive. I get a feeling it's like around June time is when it really, the celebrating of it, of yourselves will be going on, and one other person as well is very happy about it. That's what I have to say.
I also get that you said, how is she feeling at this moment? And the feeling I get is this person really would like to have a feeling of peace in their communication with you, to where you can just kind of make peace with each other and really be at peace, you know, in terms of how you communicate together. And that's what stands out for me. And that could be where Maureen is talking about the family connection, things of that nature. But I'm getting that forgiveness, peaceful, very peaceful kind of communication needs to come forth, and that that's what she would like. That's how she's feeling at the moment.
Yeah, I'm seeing too that this is very much a situation where you don't know what you got till it's gone. But that's a good thing. It's going to be temporarily, you know, gone. I don't mean to imply that you'll be separated forever. But there's, remember that there is a divine purpose in separation sometimes. Sometimes we cannot see the forest for the trees until we go walk out in the desert somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what needs to happen here, and that's what will happen here. And I definitely see a celebration involving love, a celebration, a reunion, and a very happy one. So allow time and the divine to do their job. And remember that time is relative, and that you are not alone, and neither is she. And this is just, it's necessary, that's all. And it won't happen again, because I feel like you have that question too. It will happen again once we get back together. Hang in there, we'll help you.
Yes.
Wonderful, thank you guys. It's great, great insight. I don't know, do we have any other questions in the chat rooms? We've only got a couple of minutes before the end of the show, but maybe we've got time to squeeze in another quick question if we've got one. Maureen, have you noticed any more questions coming in?
Well, you know, actually, Tammy, you're in luck. Tammy, you have Tammy says, Tammy wanted to ask something, and it goes like this. I'm finding it. Hold on. When I think of you, no, she's talking about when I think you're going to go. Tammy, I am trying to find it. Maybe I'm not even going to have time to find it now because here it is. Sorry, here it comes. Okay, Tammy's asking, I can't find it, never mind. I don't know. I can't. She wanted to ask her guide's name. This is another one. I've always wanted to know my guide's name. Can I get a second question? That's what she wanted. She wanted to know if you have a name for a guide, Steve. And I think it should be directed to Steve or Rez or Laura. I just don't get those that, you know, I'm not an expertise on that. I do get them, but not always. So there.
Okay. Tammy.
So there you have it. It's got to you, Tammy.
I get the letter L actually for Tammy, and I get a lady whose name begins with L. It's either Laura or no, it's either Lucy or Lucinda. Is Lucinda even a name?
Yes, it is a name.
Mm-hmm. They get Lucy, Lucinda, and got a lady that looks to be. She gives me the number 37. Actually, I was asking about age and wanting to get a feel for age, and she gave the number 37, and she says that she's not a member of the family, but she is with Tammy to help her working with children and some kind of healing work as well, healing and children. But she comes through clearly. She's very strong and she's got extremely gentle energy. She's almost like a nanny or a nurse for children. That's what I get. But the name Lucy or Lucinda.
I got a very, very strong feminine presence who works very closely with you. And that's really all I got. But really strong, very powerful, not overwhelming or domineering, nothing like that, like Steve was saying. I just think it's a very powerful guide. It powerful in their understanding in spirit, which is wonderful for you. Very strong feminine essence presence, and they're very close, working closely with you. So that's an honor.
Right. Well, thank you. And Rez, Maureen, you told us the question, but Rez, do you? We will just before the end of the show. Do you pick up anything there?
Yes, and it's really weird. It's the spirit says it's the name of a magician and a current magician, and the guide's name is Chris Angel, just like the magician.
Oh, like, wow. He's cute. He's gorgeous. He's gorgeous. I'm sorry.
That's great. Well, thank you, guys. This brings us to the end of another outstanding show, and I want to thank you all for being here with us, and thank my co-hosts, Rez Miranda, Alora, and Maureen Holleran. I also want to thank Doug, our executive producer, who's there behind the scenes making everything work, and want to again thank Dr. Heath for joining us. She's absolutely fascinating. Now, next week's show is going to be anchored by Jackie, and Jackie will be doing this show on Thursday about ghost hunting, so I'm really looking forward to that. So Maureen, thank you for joining us this evening. It's wonderful to have you here as always.
Thank you, and bless your heart and everybody's, always, every day.
Thank you, Maureen. And you, Rez, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Love them like you mean it, everybody.
And you too, Alora, thank you for being with us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having us, and thank you for being with us. We look forward to seeing you next week. God bless, and have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Laura. God bless everybody, and remember that the show is hosted by psychicaccess.com, so if you'd like a reading from one of the co-hosts or another of our great psychics, then you can come along to psychicaccess.com, and do join us at the same time next week. God bless everybody, and have a wonderful end of the week and a great weekend.